So good evening and wonderful to have you back. Sorry that it's been such a long break in our learning together. As I mentioned in the message that I sent out, I'm unfortunately away for another 2 weeks, and I had to decide whether to start now or to delay until I got back, but I thought we've had such a long break. Let's get the introduction started so that you get a sense of what it is we're going to be doing, and then we'll pick up again on October the 27th. That's in 3 weeks' time. We're going to miss two Sundays, and then hopefully we'll have a fairly uninterrupted period to complete the series. 2 points starting off. The first one is why a series rather than Parsha. So we're going to stick in Bereishis for several weeks. We're not going to move on to the Parsha of the week. And the second question I'll deal with is why this particular topic. So as far as the first thing is concerned with the series, there are a few reasons why I thought of it. The first reason is there is so much on the Parsha. You open the internet and you've got as many shiurim and essays as you want on the Parsha. And in a way, these Parsha essays, as great as some of them are, they're still little bites of information. And we've become used to that, like getting things in little bites, and then the next week another bite, and the next week another bite. But it doesn't allow one the opportunity to build an intellectual model, to build an idea, to build a concept, to lay some foundations and develop the ideas forward. And I thought that there might be an interest in getting our teeth into an idea, getting our teeth into an area of learning and understanding that thoroughly and well. Particularly the area of the creation of man, because for two reasons. Firstly, it's foundational to the Torah. But also, if you think about it, the moment of the creation of man is the moment from which all of human history emanates. And this is our big dispute with the evolutionists, and we're going to be discussing evolution tonight. The big dispute is, are we the natural evolution of what happened on day one, or are we the natural evolution on what happened at the second part of day six? Was there a major disruption on day six which started a new phase of history, from which everything else in history has evolved? And I'm going to show you that all the... it sounds arrogant, other than that we're saying it from the Torah's perspective, not from my own perspective, almost all the errors of social science are founded on the assumption that the human being has developed from day one instead of from day six. That's where we've gone. Everything that's gone wrong in the way we've behaved as a civilization and as individuals is from the misunderstanding of the inception of human evolution, that we have evolved as a human race, that we've evolved as a people. And we'll talk about the tension between our evolution and our devolution. In some ways we've evolved, in some ways we've devolved, and we'll be talking about that paradox. I mentioned that the idea that I'm dealing with a lot in the work that I'm doing in my other activities of the being able to look at interdependent polarities, it's called, where you've got two opposites that you've got to manage together. And the idea of evolution and devolution is one such idea of interdependent polarity. And we'll talk about that a lot. But the main area that we're going to be looking at is the understanding of the inception of humankind on day six, not before then. And we'll understand why there's an error. We'll understand why the social scientists have made a mistake. It's clear. It's easy to make the mistake. And the only social scientist that I know, a major social scientist who has built a school of social science, that I know that hasn't made that error, is Viktor Frankl. And some of you are familiar with his work. And he was shunned by the scientific world for most of his life because scientifically it's much easier to consider man's inception on day one as a natural evolution from what happened on day one and not what happened on day six. The difficulty is that in a sense, I'm saying to you, the error of social science is to think that man evolved from day one. The truth is he evolved from day six. That's also not true. The truth is he evolved from day one and day six. But day six was not an evolution from day one. So now we've got to begin to understand what really happened and how can we understand ourselves if one doesn't understand this piece of Chumash. How can we understand ourselves, not just as human beings, as humanity, and as Jews? How can we understand ourselves as individuals? How can we understand how we operate if we don't understand the creation? And it's quite strange, in a sense, that this isn't a piece of Torah that is learnt more thoroughly and more frequently and more clearly, as you'll see as we start unpacking it and learning so much about it. A fortune of what I teach in my other work, in my consulting work with business leaders, is founded on this piece of Chumash. And all I can tell you is that there are many corporations in this country that have made many, many, many millions of dollars out of understanding this piece of Chumash. So it's valuable. Let's figure it out. The first thing is, and I want to put a little bit of the concept of evolution into place in terms of the Torah, so that we can understand man's place in this whole evolutionary debate. And the source that we're going to be using today or tonight is the Ramban on Chumash. I'm first going to do a little piece of Ramban with you that you do not have in front of you, and then we'll do the piece that you do have. The first piece is on the word Bereshit. And the Ramban says the following: Im bata lefarsho kipshuto kach parsheyu. If you want to understand the idea of Bereshit simply, then let me explain it to you. Bereshit b'riyat shamayim va'aretz. This is how to read the first verse of the Torah. And if you just ask yourselves, we all know the first verse of the Torah. Every Cheder child knows the first verse of the Torah. How do you read it? How do you phrase it? How do you translate it does anybody want to say first word of the Torah in English? Anybody want to suggest? Now I've made you nervous because I've suggested this. So, sorry? In the beginning? What? No? Bereshit bara. Well, how do you translate in the beginning? God created the heavens and the earth, right? Bereshit bara lekim. The beginning God created heavens and earth. Says the Ramban, that's not the simple translation. This is the way to read it. Bereshit b'riyat shamayim v'aretz. In the beginning of the creation of heaven and earth, when the earth was tohu vavohu and darkness, when the earth was all topsy-turvy and there was nothing there, it was formless and dark, vayomer Elohim yehi or, it was then that Hashem said, let there be, I'm not going to translate or yet. Let there be or. So what has the Ramban done with this translation? The Ramban, don't forget, is one of our most authoritative exponents of the Torah. We can't understand the Torah without people like Rashi and the Ramban. There's no understanding of it. So we're not just learning somebody's opinion, we're learning how to understand the first paragraph, the first verse of Bereshit. So what has the Ramban done? He has made the creation of Or as the very, very first thing created. So it wasn't that God created heaven and earth and then he said, let there be Or. In the beginning, when heaven and earth was nothing, the very first thing God did was say, let there be Or. What does Or mean? How do you translate Or? Light. Can't be. Because where would the light come from? The sun and the stars were only created later. So if he wanted light on the first day, surely he would have created the sun first. So or can't mean light. So what else could or mean? Enlightenment? No, not quite. That's the Buddhists might say that. Energy. So what is the Torah now saying? The very first thing God created was energy. Now hold that idea. And the reason is Vatam ki bereshit briyat harakia vayabashalo haya beretz yishuv aval hayta tov vavohu mechuseh b'mayim. It was just, there was nothing. Vayomer Elokim yehi or lefi da'ato lo nivra b'yom harishon rak ha'or. And according to this view, says the Ramban, all that was created on the first day was energy. And furthermore, Vata, once again, he says, now, Shema HaMikra al Pshuto Nachon Varu, listen to the translation of the verses very clearly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bara Kol HaNivraim Me'afisa Mukhletet. Hashem created everything from nothing. So that's a principle, it's an axiomatic principle of the understanding of the creation, that God created the world from nothing. This idea, we call this idea in the Torah Yesh Me'ayin, something from nothing. So ab nihilo, to create something ab nihilo, to create something from nothing, Yesh Me'ayin, is the only word that we can use for that act of creation is Bria. So the word Bria, Bereshit Bara, the word Bria means ab nihilo, to create something from nothing. Ve'en kol ha'naaseh tachat ha'shemesh olamala hoveh min ha'ayin hatchala rishona. There's nothing else that happens in the heavens above or down below that comes from nothing. Other than on that first day, everything else is a development and an evolution. Aval hotzi min ha'efes ha'gamur ha'mukhlat yesod dak me'od ein bo mamash. God created from nothing a very fine element that has no substance. Aval hu koach mamtzi, it is a force of energy. Muchan lekabel hatsura, that can be converted into matter. This is how many years before Einstein? 500 years, more than 500 years before Einstein. First, all God created was energy. And energy could be converted into matter. And this atom of energy created one atom of energy capable of being converted into matter. It could emerge from potential into actual. So in the potential in this one little atom of energy was the potential to develop the entire universe. The Hua Chomer HaRishon, and that was the first thing created. That's all that was created. Va'achar HaHiyuli, and after this abstract element was created, Lo Bara Davar, Hashem never created anything again. That was the only thing that was created. This is the Ramban. Yeah? Not the Rambam, but the Ramban, Nachmanides. So that's what he says there. So let's get that clear. So God starts off, creates an atom of energy, and says the Ramban, thereafter everything evolves from that atom of energy. Nothing is created from nothing thereafter. So the whole debate and discussion about evolution has no place. Of course it evolved. How long it took, that's another debate, and not a very relevant debate from a Torah perspective. Who cares how long it took? What difference does it make to us living today? It's of scientific interest, so the scientists must study it and figure it out. But in terms of what concerns us is, what exactly was created and where do we fit in? Where does humanity fit into all of this? Now let's move to humankind. So then the story goes on and God creates one thing after another, but it's not really creating the sense of Bria. It's as the Ramban says, Asiya, Yetzira and Asiya. There are three levels of manufacture. There's Bria, which is to create something from nothing. There is Yetzira, to give it form. And Asiya is to apply it, to give it use. Those are the three when one forms anything. You create an idea, you give the idea form in something substantial and tangible, and then you apply it, and that's when it becomes, when the Asiya is done. So there's Bria, Yetzira, Asiya. That says the Ramban, Bria only took place on the first day, and all that was created was one atom of energy. Then we come to the sixth day, which is where we're going to start studying today. Vayomer Elohim, and God says, this is in verse 26 of the first chapter, Kafvav. Vayomer Elohim, and God said, Na'aseh Adam b'tzalmeinu kidmuteinu. Let us form man. And it's interesting, Na'aseh, it doesn't say Nivra, let us create man. Na'aseh, let us form him. So you remember we said that there are three forms of creation, in the act of creation. There is Bria, creation from nothing. That's not the word God uses. There's Yitzirah, to give that creation form. That's not the word that God uses. There's Na'aseh, let's apply him. Let's make this being functional. That's Asiyah is functionality. Bria is conceptualization from nothing. Yitzirah is formation. And Asiyah is functionality. So let's give this Bria, let's give this creature functionality. Betzalmeinu kidmuteinu, in our form and in our image. And these are the difficult words that we're going to have to unpack. V'yirdu bidgat hayam, and let them rule over these fishes of the sea, over of hashamayim, and the birds of heaven, uva behema, and over the cattle, over chol haaretz, and over the whole land, over chol haremes haromes haaretz, and everything that creeps over the land. So now let's look at the Ramban on that. And that's the piece of Ramban that you have in front of you in the handout, which is the Ramban on verse 26. Vayomer Elohim na'aseh Adam. So of course the difficulty in this verse is, who's God talking to? Na'aseh Adam means let us make man. Who's the we all of a sudden? Up till now there's been one subject in the whole parasha. All of a sudden someone else comes into the picture. Who is this? Who's he talking to? And Rashi says, based on the Medrash and a Gemara in Sanhedrin also, that God doesn't do anything without consulting with his familia, with his the forces in heaven. So by this time there are already energies and forces in heaven, and God involves them in the creation of man, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's not the route that the Ramban is going to take. So let's have a look at the Ramban, those of you who can follow in the Hebrew do so, otherwise listen to the translation. Nityached ba'asiyat ha'adam ma'amar ba'avur godel ma'alato. There is a special ma'amar. A ma'amar means vayomer. So we've had several times it says, vayomer Elohim, Hashem said, let there be light, let there be dry land, let there be birds, let there be fish. Each time it says, vayomer Hashem says. The Ramban says, there's a reason why it says vayomer, why there's a special statement around the creation of man. Now let's just pause there a moment. Isn't that odd? Of course there's a statement. There's a special statement if we go back around the creation of everyone. So why would man not have a statement? The first vayomer is in verse 3. Vayomer Elohim yehi or, let there be light. That's a statement. God creates the world with statements. In verse 6, Vayomer Elohim yehi rakia betoch hamayim, let there be a sky through the middle of the waters. In verse 9, Vayomer Elohim yikavu hamayim, let the waters gather and become oceans. And so it goes on. In verse 11, Vayomer Elohim tachei haaretz, let there be vegetation. In verse 14, Vayomer Elohim yehi maorot, let there be lights in the sky, luminaries in the sky. Verse 20, Vayomer Elohim yishutzu amayim sheretz nefesh chaya, let the water give forth living life. Verse 24, Vayomer Elohim totzei aretz nefesh chaya, let there be animals. So why is the Ramban so perplexed? Why does it say, let there be humans? He says, let there be fish, and let there be plants, and let there be light, and let there be animals. Why is he so perplexed about, let there be humans? Of course it should say, let there be humans. So you give me the answer. Why do you think he's perplexed? Well, what does Darwin tell us?
It was created at the first bit of energy.
Well, so was everything. Right. David?
Without a specific statement, then it just evolved from what came before. It was a special state, and man has a unique beginning.
Right, so the Ramban's assumption is man is an evolved animal. Why do you have to say Vayomer Elokim? So the Ramban is astonished. So you see his assumption as he approaches it is, man has evolved. It's clear that man, every scientist knows that we look like apes, that we're more evolved and developed apes. So why do you have to have a Vayomer Elokim? It doesn't say Vayomer Elokim about each stage of the evolution of animals. It didn't start with the amoeba and then go from there, Vayomer, 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 and then each of the different animals. It doesn't say that. It just says one Vayomer for all of the animals. So we, as the most sophisticated and intelligent and gifted of all animals, are still included in that first Vayomer of let there be animals. No, says the Ramban. Because of Godel Ma'alato, ki ein tivo keteva hachaya v'habehima. You've got to realize that the human being is not a natural evolution of the animals that came before him. And if he were, it wouldn't say Vayomer Elokim. So as open-minded as the Ramban is, he is the one who says all that was created on the first day was one atom of energy. He is the one who said nothing new was created as such. Everything developed and evolved. Which leads him to the question in that case, why even a ma'amar, why even say Vayomer Elokim? To teach us, man is different. There is a disruption in the evolutionary process with the introduction of man. What is the nature of that disruption? V'apshat ha'nachon b'milat na'aseh. So what does the word na'aseh, let us make, mean? Hu mipnei shekvar horet ha'ladat ki ha'lokim bara yesh ma'ayin b'yom ha'rishon levado. You already know, as I've explained to you, says the Ramban, that God created Abnielo, Yesh Ma'ayin, only on the first day. And everything thereafter was developed and made on the from that, was developed and evolved from that one atom that was created on the first day. Are you surprised that the Ramban is saying this? Is this surprising for you? Isn't this surprising? If I were to say it, I would be, my name would be all over the internet as the rabbi who shouldn't get aliyahs and orthodox shuls. But it's the Ramban. I'm just reading and translating. As God says in the Torah, He gave the water the power to produce life. So the statement was, let the water produce fish life, aquatic life. And the statement about the creation of animals was, let the land produce. So the animals are produced from the earth, from the land. Amar be'adam na'aseh. When it comes to Adam, when it comes to humankind, He says, Na'aseh, let us make. Who's the us? Klomar, Ani v'ha'aretz, earth and me. Isn't that something? It's a partnership in the creation of man. Two forces. God programmed the earth to evolve into all the animals. And whatever that process of evolution is, as the scientists are busy unraveling and figuring out, it doesn't matter. The Torah doesn't go into the details. We don't have to know the details, but we have to know the fact. So God programs that first atom. He builds into it. Today we can understand that you can take something very, very tiny and build into it programs that it can carry on playing. They're called computers. So God programs into that first atom a program that allows it to evolve and to release all of its potential, which is the layer after layer after layer of nature that is produced during the 6 days. That force, at the moment we're calling that force Eretz, the force of matter. Eretz means matter, it doesn't mean land or earth as such. Eretz means matter. In fact, what is man made from? From earth, from sand. And what are computer chips made from? Really? Sand. Okay, we're a computer chip. That's it. Made from afar. We're made from silicon. And we have a program, a microchip program, which is very, very tiny. And everything that evolves afterwards is programmed into that microchip that is called man. So when God says Naseh, he is saying to this program, he's created a computer now. The computer is called Earth. Earth is programmed to evolve for thousands of years and to continue evolving and continue evolving. That's how Earth is programmed. Who programmed it? God programmed it. Who created that first microchip? God created it. What did he create it from? From nothing. That was Bria, but that was the only thing he created from nothing. So now he has this unbelievable computer called Earth that is pre-programmed with thousands of years of evolution. And the whole universe as we have it is all programmed into that initial microchip. Now God says to his computer, so to say, Naseh, now you and I together, Earth, this massive computer with thousands of years, or according to the scientists, millions and millions of years of evolution programmed into you, you and I will create a new species called man. Shetutziha aretz haguf miyosodeha. You, Earth, this computer called Earth, evolve his body. Kasher astaba behema v'chaya. Exactly as you did with the animals and the beasts and there, like you did with the monkeys. Develop a human body for me. You do it, Earth, because I've programmed you with the ability to do that. So Earth now evolves scientifically a human body. As it says, God formed man from silicon, from the sand. V'yitein hu yitbarach haruach mipi elyon, and God will give the spirit, his divine spirit, into that human being, and he will have two parts. He will be an evolved super animal. Well, in some ways not so super, because as an animal there are many things animals do better than us, but we will be an evolved animal and a divine being in one creature. Vayipach be'apav nishmat chai. Va'amar b'tzalmeinu kidmuteinu. So when God says in our form and in our image, what does he mean? What is the plural? Who's the us? Ki yidme lishneim b'matkunot gufo la'aretz. We are like matter, we're like animals. We're like the earth, we're like nature. Think of aretz as nature. So b'tzalmeinu kidmuteinu in the plural means, on the one hand, we function just like nature. We are evolved. And also, we are similar to the higher forces that are not physical and never die. And we have both of that. We have eternity with us, and we have transience within us. We have physicality in us, and we have spirituality in us. We have nature, and we have the divine. We have these two forces all the way through. So let's pause there with it and understand what it is that the Ramban has told us. So this human being, there is a part of us that is completely evolved. The scientists are absolutely right. The body that we have is an evolved body, formed in no way differently from the bodies of any other parts of nature. Just as the animals, the apes and the monkeys, and how their bodies evolve, our bodies evolved in the same way. The earth was programmed to produce us all in an evolved state. God takes that evolved form and adds to it a divine being. And now you've got the tensions that a human being is, and that a human being has to manage. So do you understand why the scientists have made an error and said, the origin of humanity is the first day? They're right. If you look at our physical being, if you analyze us scientifically, our bodies come from the day one. We're an evolution from that first atom. No different to the apes. Just a little bit further evolved. But the process of our development is no different, says the Ramban, from the process of development of the monkeys and the apes. The piece that the scientists can't see, because it isn't in the realm of science, it can't be seen and measured, is the piece which is the divine ruach that Hashem adds into the mix and gives us these two forces. So we've got to go a little bit further into understanding the implications of these two forces. So the implications, if you just think immediately, and this is one of the implications we're going to deal a lot with, is, so what are the forces that motivate us? Now let's look at human motivation. What motivates us? And it's interesting that Darwin himself and all the social scientists since him, until very, very recently, a couple of months ago, work that was done in the University of Vancouver on a question that has troubled scientists since Darwin. Darwin articulates the question, and the question is being repeated over and over again. There is no scientific way to explain human heroism. There's no way to explain why a human being will give his life for an idea. There's no way to explain why a human being will give his life for another human being. I'm not talking about where there might be fame and the person will get recognized for it or it's a member of their family, but there are enough cases every day of people who risk their lives and even give their lives for people that they have no connection with at all and will probably never ever see again. And there is no way of explaining that. And Darwinian science doesn't explain it, survival of the fittest doesn't explain it, they've tried various things, say it's good for the species, nothing has satisfied them. They haven't been able to work that out. And one of the important principles that I use in my work, and we'll talk about it more and how it's applied, is the understanding that we have two, I call them two operating systems. And if you want, without advertising, if you want more information on how these two operating systems work and how to use them, that's all in the book that I wrote, Lead by Greatness, available on Amazon.com. And there we explain the idea that we don't have one operating system. If we had just evolved, the scientists are right, we evolved. So now we operate the same way as any animal operates. We're driven by the same forces. And what is an animal driven by? What is the force that motivates an animal?
Instinct.
So human beings have also got instincts. We get hungry and we get scared and we get angry. We do all the things that animals do. And we react in exactly the same way as animals do. That's one piece. But there's another piece where we are divine. And what is the essence of divine? How does Hashem manifest himself to us? What does Yudke Vavke mean? What does creation mean? That's kindness. There's no animal motivation for kindness. Instinct is not kindness. To do something because one has an instinct, one is driven by instinct to do that, that's not chesed, that's not kindness. Kindness is to do something that's not in your interests. Kindness is to do something that is against your interests because it's in someone else's interests. That's heroism. To be able to do something for another, or to be able to do something for an idea that is bigger than you, that's heroism. That's what heroism really is. And heroism is something that you've got to think of, not in the big sense of the word necessarily, of giving your life to save a child in a burning building or whatever. That's of course, that's heroism. But that's not the only heroism. Any time you put somebody else's interests before your own, you're being a hero. So when you're in a hurry and you're driving on the freeway and somebody cuts in front of you and you let them in, that's heroic. Animals don't do that. Animals honk their horns and they push and they get angry and they shake their fists, and that's what animals do. And you see animals on the freeway because part of us is animal. That's how we react when our instincts are triggered. We become animals. But that's not how the divine operates. The divine operates with chesed. The divine operates is willing to take a step back to let another one go forward. Because there's more in chesed. That's the heroism, to do something for someone other than oneself, or to do something for someone greater than oneself, to use Viktor Frankl's own words, is what motivates the divine. And so now we have these two forces in us. There's one force that is not driven by any animal instinct at all. It's driven by a different operating system. It's as natural and as powerful. It is as natural for a human being to give charity as it is for a human being to eat when they're hungry. Equally natural. Except one is from the animal nature and one is from the divine nature. Because we have these two things that have come together. And when we talk about the human being, everything we're going to learn from here onwards, when we talk about the human being, we're going to talk about a being that has to manage these polarities. Because it's the polarity where in which the energy resides. If you think of energy, what is energy? Energy is movement. If there's no movement, there's no energy. And usually what creates movement when it comes to energy, what creates the movement of energy, the movement of particles? Polarity. You need a positive and you need a negative. And you need oscillation. You need movement from one to the other. You need polarity to have movement. You need polarity to have energy. Human energy is dependent on the management of these two polarities. The instinct, the animal instinct, which is evolved from day one, and the divine drive, which is introduced in day six. Two different drives in the human being, and they're both alive all the time. And we need them both all the time. It's not as if one is good and one is bad. We need them both all the time. What would happen if you didn't have any animal instinct? What would happen if you didn't? I call it the defensive instinct, because that's what drives animals. They survival, defense. And when human beings act defensively, they're animals. Everything we do when we're defensive is animal. But what would happen if we completely annihilated the defensive? And we only had one operating system, divine. What would happen to us? We would die. We wouldn't eat. Our heart would stop beating. Our lungs would stop breathing. That's all part of defensive. That's part of our animal operating system. Just as baboons and lions and giraffes and zebras breathe and their heart beats. Nothing divine. It's not the divine thing. That's natural evolution that created that heartbeat. That's how that was created. God didn't come and make a heart and make lungs. He programmed nature to make those things. He created the program and he created the first chip, but then he gave it all the power to develop that. And our heart beats because its root is in day one. And our lungs breathe because their root is in day one. And we eat when we're hungry because of day one. The difference is how we do it. So we wake up in the morning the same as animals wake up in the morning. Then what happens? Do we say, where's my breakfast or where's the coffee? Then we're animals. Do we say, Mode ani lefanecha? Then we're divine. That's where we differ, is how we manage the space in that tension. Not whether we're one or whether we're both. We're both all the time. And we need both all the time. And both have to be alert all the time. And what do we do when we say the brachot of the morning? What are we thanking God for? We're thanking God for many of the things which are natural. It's the consciousness. We're aware of it. Animals aren't. For animals, it's instinctive. We can pull ourselves back and say, well, God, thanks for opening my eyes. I'm aware of it. Thanks for letting me stand up straight. Thanks for letting me walk. Animals don't do that. It's in the recognition, it's in the consciousness that we're different. That brings the divine in. But we certainly need to be operating in the defensive all the time. So we're going to see how all the greatness and all the failures of humankind have been in the success, the degree of mastery or lack thereof in managing the tension between the heroic and the defensive, as I call it, the divine and the animal, the natural instinct and the godly drive and their presence at all times. So let's look at a few more elements here to get the picture clear. The one thing is that the Chizkuni says, just to bring your attention, when the word Adam is used here, it means man and woman. So at this point, man is introduced, Adam is introduced as humankind, and he contains within him both male and female. The separation comes later, and we'll deal with that when we come to the separation, but both forces are referred to in this piece that we've just learned. The other thing is also a piece of Rabbeinu Sadiagon, even earlier than the Ramban, who learns the words B'tzalmenu Kidmutenu a little bit differently, creating man in our image. He just adds one word, Shalit, leaders, rulers. Humankind is created to rule. And we'll see some of that as it goes further in this very sentence where God says, the first thing he says, V'yudu bidgatad, and let them rule. Redu means let them rule, and the word redu is really interesting. The Medrash says for the word redu has two meanings. Redu on the one hand means rule over, and the word redu also comes from the word raid, which means become less than. Drop, become diminishment. So it means both superiority and diminishment. And Chazal say the choice is yours. You can choose to rule your environment or to be ruled by it. It's not an equal relationship. Either we master nature or nature masters us. When nature masters us, then which part of our operating system functions?
The
animal. When we master nature, we're bringing the divine into play. And it's quite interesting, I know it's not politically correct to say, but the whole environmental movement, and I'm not suggesting that care and concern about the way we treat nature is not important, it is important, but we have to be very careful that we don't lose this role of humanity, and that we don't become servants of nature. We are not servants of nature. Nature is here to serve us. We are not here to serve the earth. We are not here to protect the earth. We are not here to nurture the earth. We are here to master the earth and make it work for us. Yes, we have to do that in a sustainable way. We can't do it in a way that destroys its capacity to continue doing that. But we, our function, the purpose of our creation, is to master nature, not to worship nature. And what is it called when you worship nature? What is our name for that? Avodah Zarah, that's idolatry. That's the prime form of idolatry. People think there's no idolatry today. Nature worship is idolatry. Not to understand that the prime element of creation is man. That everything was created. Nature was created to serve man. The animal world was created to serve man. The vegetable world was created to serve man. And man has to bring that divine and manage these two parts of himself in such a way that he's able to elevate nature and direct nature as a leader should be. That's a shalit. God creates man to rule. A ruler doesn't mean to dominate only. Rule means to elevate, to direct, to give direction to. That's what we need to do. To give meaning to create vision for. That's what we're meant to lead the world. We're meant to lead. We at this point, I'm just talking about humankind, not the Jewish people specifically. Humankind is meant to take a role of leading the world forward, leading the world's evolution, and leading the world's development is something that we need to do. So that's the introduction that I wanted to give you to the creation of man. The understanding that there are, as the Ramban says, yes, there was evolution. Not talking about how long it was it 6 days or it wasn't 6 days, irrelevant. The Torah says 6 days. Was a day the same length as a day is today? To me personally, it doesn't make any difference. I don't know about you. Does it make a difference to you how long a day was then? Does it change your life in any way? Is it going to affect you? Are you going to make different decisions if I tell you a day was 24 hours or a day was 25 million years? Are you going to live differently? So it's just irrelevant for us. It's relevant for scientists, not relevant for us. So whatever these days were, that's what it took. But what's important is it was an evolutionary process. God creates one atom, a microchip, its energy, and within it is the program to evolve all of nature for all of eternity, until the end of the earth. That program is built into that very first chip. Included in that evolution was man in our physical form. What was not included is the superimposition onto that being, a divine spirit. And the divine spirit, as we're going to see, if you look just a little bit further, and we'll come to it in a couple of weeks' time, the story of the creation of man is repeated slightly differently, or in slightly more detail, in chapter 2. And one of the things there is, in verse 7 of chapter 2, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et ha'adam afar min ha'adama, and God formed, here it says Yitzer, still not bara, didn't create us, just formed us from earth. Vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim, and then he breathed into this form the breath of his life. And then Vayihi ha'adam lenefesh chaya, and then the human being was a living being. And Unculus translates that as Ruach Mamalalo, capable of speech. And the Targum Yonason translates it as capable of speech, sight, and hearing. And that's really interesting, and that's the last point that I want us to look at, to try and understand what this creature is that God created. So firstly, we are the only creature capable of speech, and speech did not evolve. The ability to speak the way we do, and speaking doesn't mean communicating, because animals can communicate with each other. So that's not what makes us unique. What makes us unique is we can create an idea in our mind and transfer that idea into the mind of another. That's unique. That didn't evolve. That's Ruach Mamalala. The ability to take a thought, give it words, articulate it in a way that another person can understand and grasp, that's Ruach Mamalala, the power of speech. And the power of speech means not only that we can transfer our thinking, but it allows us to think conceptually, because to think conceptually, you've got to be able to make definitions, you've got to be able to give things names. You can't hold a concept in your mind if you haven't got a name for it. So you can think of it, the relationship between a chair and a table, but you've got to have a word for it. You've got to have the word chair and table, otherwise you can't work with those relationships. So the power of speech, Ruach Mamalala, is what is responsible for our whole intellectual capability. And the Targum Yonason says power of vision and power of hearing as well. Why does he say that? Don't animals also have power of vision and power of hearing? Can't animals see? Of course they can. Can't animals hear? Of course they are. Many of them can hear and see much better than we can. So why does he say that's what it means? And the human being became a living being capable of speaking, hearing, and seeing. Because clearly the way we hear and see is very different from an animal, and that's what makes us different. The way we hear and see, when we hear, it doesn't just mean that we hear, it means we're capable of listening. And what happens when you listen? What's the difference between listening and hearing? Hearing, you hear sound. When you listen, you interpret the silence between the sounds. That's very different. That's what listening means. Listening is you can interpret the silence between the sounds. You can understand meaning. You can understand mood. You can understand emotion from what you hear. You can understand texture. And sight doesn't mean seeing, it means insight, to be able to see into something, to be able to see beyond the surface. And if we understand that this is what differentiates man, humankind, from all other species, then we've also got to understand that what differentiates the great human being from the lesser human being is how well they do those three things. How well can a human being conceive of an idea and transfer that to others? That's human greatness. How well can a human being see beneath the surface? Or do they only see the veneer and make their judgments and decisions on the basis of the veneer? The degree to which there's insight, being able to see into something, the degree to which one can do that is the degree to which one is a great human being. And the degree to which one can listen rather than hear. One can listen to what's being said and be able to understand the silence, be able to understand the meaning, be able to understand what's not being said, and to be able to interpret what's not being said. That's the power of true listening. And the better one is able to do those things, the greater the human being is. And therefore, if I were to say to you, what should an educational system be teaching? Those three things. What more do you need to learn than those three things? If you can do those three things competently, what else do you have to know? If you can conceive of ideas and communicate them competently, if you can see into the essence of something, not the surface, if you can hear the true meaning of something and understand the implications of it, what more do you need to know? And what does our educational system do? Teaches exactly the reverse. How to regurgitate ideas that have been created by others, how to see things on the surface and give them back on the surface, and how to hear what you're told and not hear anything that you weren't told. Don't use your imagination, just give back what you've been taught and what you've been given. Our very humanity is destroyed by the educational system. So you realize what a job we have, and as Jews, if we're tasked with bringing humanity back to God's original intention, that's our role. Humanity has drifted so far. The problem is we've drifted with humanity. There's no point in that. You will see when we're later on, when we get to the creation of the Jewish people and to the role of Abraham, what that really is. But our role is to bring humanity back to the original intention of why God created humanity. And humanity has drifted so far from that. When we begin to understand the force of that drift and how we have to be able to counter that drift to keep ourselves out of it and to keep the people we love and care about out of it, then one understands what the avodah is, what the task of being Jewish is in a world that is very, very troubled and very diluted. So we have time just for a few questions.